Big Screen Sports is brought to you by Blue Wire's new show, On the Hook with Abner Mares. Abner Mares is a world champion boxer, Olympian sports commentator, and most importantly, dad to two little girls. Beloved by abuelas and hardcore fans alike, Abner is a pro at entertaining the world both in and out of the ring. On Blue Wire's new podcast, On the Hook with Abner Mares, we're here from his Abner, his family, fellow athletes, and other people who made the boxer the man he is. He'll talk about the state of boxing, his journey from a kid on the streets to a boxing champ, sports, music, culture, and family life. Listen to On the Hook with Abner Mares wherever you get your podcast. Episodes in English out on Tuesdays and episodes in Spanish out on Wednesdays.
Blue Wire.
All right, welcome back to Big Screen Sports, the sports movie podcast, brought to you by Blue Wire Podcast, and this week presented by Indeed and BetOnline.ag. I am your host, Kyle Banduho. It's week three of Rocktober, which the previous weeks has been dedicated to talking about the Rocky franchise. This week, we're going to do the non-sports movie, but keeping the Rocktober theme. We're talking School of Rock. Mike Schubert joined. He is the first member of the Four Timers Club on Big Screen Sports. Mike, as always, was fantastic. So were his podcasts, Potterless Horse and Meddling Adults, which he had me on for the season one finale. It is the only podcast game show for charity I know of. It was really fun to be on the pod. It's a really good show. Go check out the work Mike does. Frankly, he is just the best. I love having him on Big Screen Sports. We had a great time with this one. I still haven't had Mike on to cover a typical sports movie. We did Pitch Perfect earlier this year. We've done High School Musical. We've done the Quidditch scenes of Harry Potter and now School of Rock, which kind of just like Pitch Perfect lines up as a sports movie. It's a really fun one to talk about, a fun one from both of our childhoods, still insanely rewatchable. Really interesting to watch it as an adult. If you haven't, I encourage you, go take a rewatch. It is, I believe, on Netflix, but it's very, very interesting. It's still enjoyable, but you notice some more things as an adult. But after the past two, we did School of Rock this past month and then Crazy Stupid Love last month. After these past two, I'm going to get back to having the Big Screen Sports Facebook group vote on the non-sports movie of the month, so go join on Facebook. I will put up four nominees here real soon for what we do in November. Next week, going to cap Rocktober with Rocky, the original underdog story. Looking forward to that. It's been a long time coming on for the sports movie podcast to actually cover Rocky. If you've been enjoying Rocktober, enjoying Big Screen Sports, remember to go check out past episodes. They're all pretty evergreen. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. If you're on Apple Podcast, rate, review, leave a five-star review. Tell me what you think about the pod. I will read out all new five-star reviews at time of recording. Also, if you're a baseball fan, go check out my baseball interview series from Phenom to the Farm presented by Baseball America. That comes at you every other Tuesday. New episode of that drop in tomorrow if you're listening to the day this drops, October 19th. But with that, let's go talk School of Rock with Mike Schubert. All right, joining Big Screen Sports to wrap up Rocktober, he is the host of Potterless and Meddling Adults, the co-host of Horse, Mike Schubert. Thank you for returning to Big Screen Sports, Mike.
Thank you for having me. I am very honored that I get to talk about this particular movie, which was very important in seventh grade Mike's life and continues to be today. But I think if you give me one of those tests of, like, quote the most dialogue consistently from a movie, like gun to my head type of thing, I feel like School of Rock would be my go-to.
There's a ton of it's very easy to remember. It's like School of Rock is like riding a bike. You find out you remember a lot of stuff.
Oh yes. Oh yeah. All the lyrics, many of the jokes, all of the antics. It's a great time.
Before we get into it, Mike, tell the folks where they can find you on social media and where they can check out all the good stuff you're doing. You have more podcasts than anyone I've had on this show.
Oh man, I don't know if that means if that's a compliment or an insult. But yeah, on social media, I'm at Schubes17, Schubes17. And then as far as my podcasts, Potterless, which is me reading the Harry Potter books for the first time, never did it as a kid. Horse, which is a basketball podcast where we only talk about the fun stuff. So, you know, just like Jimmy Butler's coffee business and not really about his points per game. And then Meddling Adults, where Kyle's been on and we have people going head to head to try to solve children's mysteries for charity. All of those are just wherever you get your podcasts, Spotify, Apple, whatever. If you just search for them or search for Multitude, which is the collective I'm a part of, they'll show up.
Meddling Adults is one of the most fun podcasts out there. It's the only podcast game show that I am aware of and that I regularly listen to. I enjoyed my time on there. I encourage everyone to go check that out. But Mike, today you are the first member of the Four Timers Club on Big Screen Sports, and we have talked about some interesting stuff. We have talked about Quidditch. We have talked about High School Musical. We've talked about a cappella, and now we are talking about School of Rock, the 2003 comedy.
If he doesn't come up with the rent by the end of the week, he's out of here.
You wake me up for that? Come on!
Dewey Finn would have sold his soul for rock and roll, but nobody was buying.
You're an embarrassment.
You're out.
Maybe it's time to give up those dreams.
Is this Mr. Schneebly?
I'm the principal here at Horace Green Prep, and we need somebody to start immediately.
So how much are we talking here?
$650 a week.
Now, at the most prestigious prep school in the country.
Yes, Tinkerbell.
That poster charts everyone's performance.
Where the students are rewarded for following the rules.
What kind of a sick school is this?
He's going to teach them a lesson.
There will be no gold stars or demerits.
That will rock their world.
It's called Rock Band.
Jack Black. The School of Rock.
After being kicked out of his rock band, Dewey Finn becomes a substitute teacher of an uptight elementary private school, only to try and turn his class into a rock band and star Jack Black, Joan Cusack, Mike White, Sarah Silverman, and a bunch of kids. It was directed by the god Richard Linklater. It was written by Mike White, who plays Ned Schneebly. He also wrote Orange County, Nacho Libre, and The Good Girl, which was all news to me. I didn't realize that Ned Schneebly was penning those movies.
The only one I knew out of that was Nacho Libre.
Orange County was also Jack Black. That was Jack Black and Colin Hanks. The Good Girl was like a dark comedy with a stellar cast. It's Jennifer Aniston, John C. Reilly, a really young Jake Gyllenhaal. Good Girl is like quietly really good, but this one got a 91% on Rotten Tomatoes. It has been adapted for Broadway, for TV, was wildly successful. Jack Black was nominated for a Golden Globe for this one.
Whoa, I did not know that.
Just crazy. It was the year that Bill Murray won for Lost in Translation. Also the year that Johnny Depp was nominated for Captain Jack Sparrow. This movie was a smashing success, and it is probably... For me, it's probably the peak Jack Black performance. What about you?
Yeah, I agree. This is just Jack Black at his peak. And also, I remember I had the DVD and I watched every single behind the scenes extra feature that they had. I was obsessed with this movie in middle school. And Mike White said that he wrote this explicitly for Jack Black. Like, he was writing the movie and he said in an interview something to the effect of, if Jack Black turned it down, I don't know what we would have done, because the whole time I was imagining Jack Black playing Dewey.
And frankly, if he doesn't do what he does in this movie, if Jack Black isn't Jack Black and can't come off as likable, even if his character is... We're going to get into this.
Yeah.
Tough. Dewey Finn is truly a tough scene when you watch this as an adult. This movie doesn't work without Jack Black, but for you, is it a Hall of Famer, All-Star, Starter, or Bench Warmer?
For me, it's a Hall of Famer. I just think that it's so fun, and there are so many different elements of it that are very good. The music obviously is incredible. I love having the kids that are just acting like kids, and the casting, like they pick just musicians. So when they are playing nervous kids in a classroom, it becomes more believable, which I think is fun. And I just think it's incredibly well written. And I think that the way it is set up, the script for Jack Black, it's like when a sports team takes the entire roster just to shape it around one player, like the Rockets this season when they traded away all their centers because they were like, look, we have to make optimized for James Harden and Russell Westbrook. This is what we have to do. It reminded me of that, where this whole movie exists to let Jack Black be in his purest sense and his truest form. And I think it works really well.
Yeah, you have to overlook some key aspects when you watch it with an objective lens on. Like, you have to overlook that Dewey is kind of despicable for most of the movie. Like, this is a human that you wouldn't be friends with. You wouldn't be able to tolerate. But the performance, he's at his best. He makes the movie work. Dewey isn't a malicious guy. He's not like a cruel guy, but he's very selfish. But because of Jack Black, it works. You've got the great soundtrack, the great child actors, and then the great payoff at the end, which is an ultimate big chill scene at the end of this one, which is kind of why, as you pointed out to me when we were messaging about this, that much like Pitch Perfect, this one is basically a sports movie.
Yeah, I mean, it really feels like, it's like, in a way, it's like Mighty Ducks, but about music now, because you have the coach, Gordon Bombay, who most people don't know this, but at the beginning of Mighty Ducks, he is arrested for a DUI and then has to coach the team like as a sentencing. So similarly, like not the highest quality character person in terms of their decision making, but when it comes to putting them in front of the kids, and trying to make them perform at their best, he's able to bring out the best in them. And then, yeah, ultimately ends in them overcoming all odds. And it's just the classic, I mean, spoiler alert for anyone that doesn't know the ending, it's the classic, like, they didn't win, but they should have, but they're the fan favorite kind of thing, you know? Lost the popular vote, or won the popular vote, but lost the Electoral College kind
which
of
which really stings all these
stings
years
a lot.
Later. I didn't put this on the run sheet, but I just wanted to throw it out. Where does the School of Rock rank in terms of movie bands for you?
Ooh,
when
man.
You think movie bands, what do you think? Because I like some of my favorites. The Wonders from That Thing You Do is probably the peak for me. Stillwater from Almost Famous. Spinal Tap from This Is Spinal Tap. CB4, which is essentially just NWA from the Chris Rock movie. And then Brie Larson's band from Scott Pilgrim is awesome.
They're really solid. I think the problem with ranking them is that we do really only get this one song from them and then the outro credit thing, but they are very good. I mean, you have to give them at least the novelty credit of all being kids and still being very talented.
And that they all play their own instruments, which is great. That's part of the IMDb trivia, is that Linklater refused to direct unless the kids played their own instruments, which is incredible. I don't know if he had the he probably wasn't thinking about this, but it makes for these incredible cast reunions. There's a great video of them from 2013 reuniting and playing the song, which is
awesome.
Oh,
I gotta see this. I really need to watch that. That sounds great.
It's great. I will send that to you as soon as we're done recording. I have one final kind of opening question for you. Do you think, had this happened in real life, which is how we look at a lot of the things on this podcast, would Dewey actually have avoided prison time?
I don't think so. I really don't think so. Like, there's just so many, the fact that it's already bad enough that he was acting as someone else, and I'm sure there is some sort of financial white-collar crime of identity theft, getting paid for work that you were pretending as someone else. Like, that's already bad enough. But then the fact that you take the kids on a rogue field trip, that the only reason you were able to even make it seem like it was okay is because you got the principal drunk. Like, there is a lot of layers where I don't think just because they happened to win over the crowd, even though they didn't win for this radio contest battle of the bands, I don't think he escapes prison time.
So I don't think so either, but I was giving it some thought as to how this scenario could actually play out like it does in the movie, where in the end, instead of being in the starting a prison band, kind of like Blues Brothers, he is just running a like successful rock school with Ned Schneebly. So you think about all the parents, and all the parents are very rich, affluent, powerful people who have the money and if you think about most of them, the whiteness to make either really bad for Ned or really good for Ned. And if there's one thing that rich people hate more than being had, which Ned has essentially conned them for 3 weeks, it is letting other people think that they've been had. So they could have taken this and said, you know what, like, look at this amazing thing that this person did, and we've all learned a valuable lesson here, and he's taught us such great things about our kids, and we're going to support him, and we're going to start this school. I think the parents would have funded the school just to avoid saving face and having to tell all their friends at the country club, like, yeah, we were actually paying $15,000 a year for essentially a con man to come and teach our kids.
I like it. I think it's smart. I mean, I feel like they also have the influence for whatever government is trying to, our judicial system is fucked. I'm sure they have enough money, power, and influence to make it not happen.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they could have made it so Dewey doesn't even, see the inside of a courtroom.
Yeah. Like, not even probation for doing
it. I also wonder if there's a very particular house arrest situation where he can, like, be in his apartment and the School of Rock, and that is it. Nothing else.
Which is basically all he's ever wanted.
Yeah, so
is to just be allowed to sit inside and play rock music all day.
It's a way of living.
It is. The IMDb trivia for this one, I only grabbed a few things. We already mentioned the thing about kids playing their own instruments. Jack Black thought of all the nicknames for the kids, which is fun when you think about it. That's a very, like, it's a very endearing feature of the character, you know, all the kids. And you know most of the kids, like, Fancy Pants. You only really call him Fancy Pants.
Mm-hmm.
The idea for the movie came when writer Mike White, a.k.a. Ned Schneebly, moved into an apartment next to Jack Black. White would often find Jack Black running naked through the halls or blasting much of the music featured in the movie at full volume. So who would be a worse neighbor, Jack Black or Dewey Finn?
Oh, man. I would say probably Dewey Finn, because at least Jack Black has money, fame, cool friends, etc., whereas Dewey Finn seems really, all he's got going to him is like his spunky can-do attitude and his middling music abilities.
Yeah, there's a benefit to hanging out with Jack Black.
Right,
there's some hangers-on benefits. There's nothing for Dewey Finn. He's just like a parasite. Mm-hmm. Originally in the script, Dewey was supposed to have run the teacher over before she came to school, which stopped her from teaching the class for 3 weeks. Instead, they changed it to her falling in the shower instead.
Yeah, I think that's a little bit better. It's more fun that he didn't cause any harm in the situation. The worst thing he did to kickstart this was pretend that he was Ned Schneebly.
Yeah, you don't need any more reasons to think that Dewey is a degenerate.
Yeah.
Lastly, the script originally called for Jack Black and Joan Cusack's characters to fall in love following their outing to the bar. I am very glad that the movie did not do this and instead has Spider hitting on her after.
Oh,
the,
God, after Spider, so good. Oh, my gosh. Spider is, that's a whole nother thing we'll have to get into. But yeah, I think more movies need to be comfortable with male and female character, man and woman character, not necessarily becoming love interests at the end. I find it so incredibly hokey that it happens so often that you just can't have like, oh, it's a man and a woman. They you know, enjoy being together. Clearly they have to get together. It's like, why can't they just be friends? That's what I really appreciated about Rogue One, is that at the end they didn't like kiss and all this stuff. It was just like, we are here and I am boy, you are girl, and it is okay. You know, I appreciate movies not feeling like you have to throw romance into the mix, and I liked that that didn't happen here because it wouldn't have been believable.
No, because these characters, the only thing they had in common was that they liked Stevie Nicks.
Yeah, and that's not enough to hold together a relationship.
I have a fun fact about Spider that I don't have all the information in front of me, but I do have a fun nugget. Have you heard about all the drama surrounding the recent Netflix release? I think it is called Cuties or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. It's like the French movie where it's like about girls, young girls being like, I don't know, like put in like modeling and sexy clothes and stuff. And then the director's like, oh, it's a commentary on it. It's like, but you're still doing it.
The one. So I don't have the information directly in front of me, but there is a Texas town that is suing Netflix for child pornography. And the DA of that town is Spider.
What? Holy shit.
I'm going to pull this up right now because I should have before, Spider. But just when I said Spider, I remember this. I want to shout out my buddy, man, Pete Hart, for bringing this to my attention.
Wow. I mean,
so it's in Texarkana.
Okay. Oh, wait, familiar.
That's wow. Texas town has been taking Netflix and Hulu to court a lot more than you'd think. So I have to be specific for Cuties. I'm not sure I want this in my
private window incognito. Yeah,
should have. Tyler, Texas.
Yeah, I know Tyler. Yeah,
Spider is the DA there.
That is absolutely Lucas incredible. Babin. Good for him.
He's a DA now. He has gone from Spider to DA, which is absolutely crazy. But we are going to go from IMDb trivia to best scene. Where
I do have to say, before we get into this, there is one fun fact that I remember from the director's commentary, and it's the movie is just called School of Rock. But if you watch the opening thing where they have the neon sign when they're going through the bar, which I think is a great intro to it, you know, going through and then eventually the music's all muffled and then gets louder. The neon sign says The School of Rock, and they went back and forth a lot between calling it School of Rock versus The School of Rock, and they eventually dropped the because it was cleaner, but they already kept it in that neon sign intro thing, and then they just left it there, even though the movie is not called The School of Rock. And then they kind of flip-flop back in between during the movie of calling the band School of Rock versus The School of Rock, so it's just an interesting thing that it kind of flip-flops throughout.
It's kind of like the Facebook. Drop the.
Drop the.
Let's get into best scene. I'm going to list these chronologically. I only put down four as I've been trying to get a little more specific with these. But if I do miss one of your favorites, by all means, stop me. I'm going chronologically. The first one I have of scenes that, like, if this is on cable or something, I have to catch. When he makes the band, when he figures out what all the kids are good at playing and what they can do.
What's your name?
Lawrence.
Lawrence, you ever played keyboards? Any techno?
No, I only play piano.
Okay, all right, fair enough. Try this out for me, okay? Just give this a try on my count, all right? One, two, three, four. Yeah. Yes. Come on, come on, come on, come on, now touch me, babe. Ba-da-ba-da, can't you see that I am not afraid? Shaka-ka-ka, Lawrence is good at piano. He shall be rocking in my show. Ra-ga-ga-ga. Stop. That's perfect. You're perfect. Stay right there, okay? You. Could you come up?
Because it's kind of like a three-part scene. First he picks out all the musicians. Like, he sees them in the music class, and then he's like, wait, you can play oboe. Now you can play bass. Congratulations. And then he has the conversation with Lawrence at lunch, which is the first redeemable thing that Dewey has really done on movie. And then he assigns all the various parts to the students.
Yeah, it's really good. I also like that you said oboe and not cello. I would love to see an oboe player transition to bass. Like, do I blow into the strings?
Oh, she was playing cello. That is, oops. That's how you know I was not in band.
It is still a stretch. That's that, like, oh yeah, the cello, just turned it on the side and now it's the same. But yeah, that scene is just, it's so wholesome and beautiful, especially when the kids... Like, bringing up Lawrence to start doing Touch Me, I think that's the peak of that scene. It's so good.
It is. There's one downside of that scene. And, like, even if you're Dewey, who's a little untethered from reality, because reality gets in the way of his dreams, he should know not to make three girls groupies. He should just know not to say that.
Yeah, I think that was, I think that's a hindsight. This movie was made in 2006, probably wouldn't have done it this way, because at least you could have called them, what they end up being is the costume designers. He should have just called them the costume designers, because costume designers, because when you're calling kids groupies, not a great look.
Yeah, it'd be like you're going to run the fan club or something, but ooh.
Yeah, merch table, costume, like, that's basically what they do, and then you don't have to have the uncomfortable nature of... but I guess the point of it is because then the parents later Google what groupie is, so maybe it was just a very long setup for the parent outrage scene, but yeah, still not ideal.
Yeah, yeah.
I also could 1000% see it being a way where Dewey just... thinks it's understood that he doesn't mean the sleep with the band part. But yeah, even what's her face, Miranda Cosgrove, Summer, she looks it up and she Googles it. So yeah, I guess groupie is just so that Miranda and then the parents can get mad. So maybe that's all it was. But I could also see Dewey just being oblivious and thinking, oh, well, of course I didn't mean that stuff. They're kids. Come on, guys.
Well, yeah, because Dewey operates in his life as everyone should know what he's talking about and be on the same wavelength.
Everyone knows where I'm coming from without me having to explain myself. Everything I do, he's just, you're a classic movie character of, like, I mean well, and thus all of my poor decisions should be glossed over.
Exactly. The next one I have is the creation of the Step Off rock song. When Dewey's like, how do we write a rock song? And it's about getting angry, but it's the first time you see Dewey intentionally trying to help one of these kids' confidence for something other than his own uses, because he sees, like, Zach's dad giving him a bunch of shit.
Yep.
And so he uses that. Like, it's the first... The Lawrence conversation is good, but Dewey is also, pumping him up because Dewey needs a rock band, which is inherently selfish. Like, he just saw Zach, like, Zach is in a bummer mood because his dad was giving him shit, and he uses this exercise strictly to pump him up, and it's not for Dewey's uses, which is why I add it was not something that I thought of that, not fondly, but like it wasn't like a big scene for me until I rewatched it. I was like, this was actually really good.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's really nice. I really appreciate him doing it. And it just shows you the power of a good teacher is someone that is able to do that. And like no one else except for Zach knows what Dewey is doing in that moment. And that's what makes it even better. To everyone else, it's just a music lesson. But to Zach, it's so much more.
Exactly. The next one, and this is kind of a theme, I guess, for the scenes that I've listed, when Dewey discovers Zach's song, it starts with Fancy Pants saying that they should just wear their uniform, which is a nice touch, but they basically, Zach has written the song that they're going to end up like actually playing. And it is just, it's good to see. The best scenes in this movie, I think, are when Jack Black and the kids are just cooking in the classroom.
Oh, for sure. Especially because they said this, that in the director's commentary as well, that many of the times the kids are laughing at Jack Black, it's just genuine. They are laughing at him, and that caused sometimes gold, which they kept in the movie, but sometimes they like couldn't use a scene because it was too funny, which I think is always great.
Oh, I can see if you're between the ages of 10 or 15, Jack Black in person probably being the funniest person ever just because of how ridiculous he lets himself be at all times.
Oh, yeah. I was about the age of the kids when this movie came out. I think I was in... When did this movie come out? Was it 2003?
2003.
Yeah, so 2003. So, yeah, I was 11. So I was in, like, fourth or fifth grade when this came out. So I was about the age of the kids. So, yeah, it was... I mean, for me, it was just so funny.
Yeah, oh, I mean, yeah. This was an automatic hit for kids our age. And It was absolutely a DVD you got and just watched every weekend. Because it was cool. It is technically a kid's movie, but it was cool. It didn't feel like a kid's movie. It hits that perfect balance.
Yeah, it's got that Pixar vibe where if you watch it as a kid, you laugh at Jack Black's antics. And when you're an adult, you laugh at some of the more innuendo, thoughtful jokes that go completely over your head as a kid.
Yeah, it's got something for everyone. The final scene I've got is, and this one is kind of the battle of the bands. The song still goes really, really hard.
Yeah, it's really good. It's solid. The whole theater and everything is great as long as we overlook the fact that this is like the middle of the day on a weekday and it's a sold out arena.
That is a huge red flag.
Other than that, I mean, hey, just a testament to the promoters, the true hero of the movie, whoever got that filled out. But yeah, it's just a great scene, especially with like the last minute thing of the lighting and tech guy has to do it on the fly. Like I like getting the other people involved, the non-musicians get their bit of glory at the last minute heroics. So I think that's nice.
Yeah, it's great. Did I miss any of your favorites? I thought about including the parent teacher night scene.
Oh, that's
but it's painful
but wonderful. The two that I pointed out that you haven't listed, one would be when he has to sing the Math is a Wonderful Thing song when the principal comes in and he has to do the song when she's like, oh, you're learning. Like she asks what the guitar is and he has to do the Math is a Wonderful Thing. Like that whole song is so funny to me. So
especially because Dewey was absolutely a C-minus student in high school.
The yes, I was testing you, it's 9. Like, oh, it's so wonderful. But I like that a lot. And also, I know they don't end up going with the song, which I think makes sense because Zach's song does work better. But Jack Black performing by himself what the song will be, where he describes everything, you know, with the legend of the rent and doing all of that. And my favorite is of that when he talks to Freddie the drummer about the drum roll and he's like, you know, the Hawaii 5-0 where they go like that whole thing where he's doing like the backup vocals and that. I think it's all in one take too, which is incredible. Like they don't cut at all. And it's just, I think that is like the peak all-star signature. It's the LeBron James block of Andre Iguodala of Jack Black's career. Like that is the thing they're going to play if he ever wins like a Lifetime Achievement Oscar.
The artist must be true, but the legend of the rent was way past due. And then, Katie, you come in with the bass. Well, you think you'll be just fine without me, but you're mine! You think you can kick me out of the band, and then, Zach, you come in with a face melter.
I'm honestly kind of glad that, the Hawaii Five-O thing, though, was... It was the only time they used that shtick of, like, obviously these kids aren't going to know what Hawaii mm-hmm. Five-O is, but they could have gone really heavy with that and, like... Because that's a common trope. Like, oh, you youngins don't know about this. They just sprinkled it in right there. It is really... I mean, it is Jack Black going for it in every sense of the word. Mm-hmm. My favorite is... I mean, it's easy for me. It's the Battle of the Bands.
Yeah. It's a good one. I think it's hard. I think if I'm going for like the wholesome answer, it's assembling the team and having everyone find out their instruments because it's like the most emotional. And I love a good let's get the gang together type scene. But
gang together is like, that's the best. I was telling my fiance last night, like, I love it when the band gets back together.
Yeah. So that is always good. But I do love, it's like the Jack Black monologue with the meow, meow in the end of time. Like, it's really hard. I feel like those are 1A and 1B for me, where it's like one is pure comedy and one is like, I get to feel the emotion of everyone doing the music and stuff. They're both so great.
They are. Let's take a quick ad break, and then we'll get back with the best quote. Big Screen Sports is brought to you by Indeed. Even though sports had a break, your business didn't. You have to keep moving, and that makes hiring more important than ever. Indeed is here to help. Indeed.com is the number one job site in the world because Indeed gets you the best people fast. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need, and you can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. Plus, Indeed provides powerful tools to make your search that much easier, like sponsored jobs, which are shown to be 3.5 times more likely to result in a hire. With 73% of online job seekers visiting Indeed each month, Indeed is going to get you the important hire you need, just like they have for 3 million businesses. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job posts, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Try out Indeed with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is our best offer available anywhere. Go right now to Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Offer valid through December 31st. Big Screen Sports is also brought to you by our old friends at BetOnline.ag. The wait is over. Football is back. You might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on every possible chance to win the season. Game spreads, totals, team player, and coaching props. BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can also get in on season opening bonuses today. Start off wagering on wins, division, and championship futures all day, every day. And that stuff changes week to week, so that's always open. Head to BetOnline today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use promo code BLUEWIRE at BetOnline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. All right, we're back. Mike, for you, is there a single quote in this one that, you know, that sticks out as your favorite in the movie?
Oh, gosh, the problem is that it is so quotable. There are so many incredible quotes, and they're all so different and so great in so many different ways. It's just
and a lot of them are quick and quippy. It's not like, you know, powerful. It's not like a Field of Dreams type quote about something about like the you know, how magical baseball is. Like, one of my favorites is just when like Fancy Pants asked about designing clothes, and the Jack Black,
of course you can, Fancy Pants.
Like, I just love that.
Yeah, and similarly with Fancy Pants, when when they're all making fun of him, he's like, you're tacky, who's your bully? You, what? You're tacky and I hate you. You see me after class. And then also makes fun of the bow tie, and he's like, don't be talking about my bow tie. Like, also, Fancy Pants stuff is very good.
There's also the one that I come back to, and it's early in the movie, is and I think I come back to it because I've heard it the most, because I'm pretty sure it was in the trailer, is Freddie saying, doesn't a hangover mean you're drunk? And Jack, yeah. No, it means I was drunk yesterday.
That one's pretty good. I don't know if this counts as a quote, but the handshake with Lawrence is always really fun for me. And I have done that with many of my friends. My wife and I do it from time to time. But yeah, the whole, you know, give me a platform, let's rock today, slap it, shoot it, kaboot it. That, I think, is a great... All the stuff of Dewey and Lawrence is just really fun.
Yeah, the cat's pajamas, man. The bee's knees.
The bee's knees?
It's so good. There's not really... It's very hard to pick one.
Yeah, it's... I really have a hard time. They're just so... There are so many. I also do I appreciate in the beginning when Dewey is arguing with Ned and he says, would you tell Picasso to sell his guitars?
Dude, well, that's the classic. That gives you a huge insight into Dewey's sense of self-importance despite having zero accomplishment in his life. It's so good.
Yeah. I think if I have to go with like one exchange, I would probably pick where... The one where he tells the kids to be mean to him, because you get everyone being like peak them. Freddy says go to hell, which is very Freddy of him. Summer says he's the worst teacher that she ever had, which is very Summer. And then Lawrence just like deadpan, just straight up like, you're fat and you have body odor, like just straight up. It's just I appreciate the kids just being the truest sense of themselves.
The kids are really good. And we're gonna
get great.
Into that.
I love it. I really do.
I have another thing I didn't put on the rundown, but I want to ask, what is the best music drop in this movie? And I'll give you some nominees, and I'm going to exclude the actual School of Rock song. I'm thinking like famous songs we had heard. Back in Black, when he's picking the kids' band positions. Mm. Immigrant Song on the way home from the tryouts. Mm-hmm. Edge of 17, when he's having a beer with Joan Cusack. And then It's a Long Way to the Top as the encore song and into the credits song.
I think the Immigrant Song, because I know for a movie in 2003, that was like a landmark get, because Led Zeppelin notoriously didn't let people use their music in stuff, and they weren't in a lot of movies, and they had to, and this was in the DVD extras, they had to write a letter, and they filmed all the kids saying, can we please do it? And when they were filming the Battle of the Band scene, and they had a full arena full of extras... Jack Black has a video of him like in his full getup with the guitar on stage begging Led Zeppelin to let them use the Immigrant Song, and then they got them to use it. So like it's so good in the scene, and I think it's only made better by knowing how hard they had to work to get that song. And now Led Zeppelin uses their songs in more stuff, but for a while they were really, really stingy about it.
So that was part of the IMDb trivia, and then Jack Black actually introduced the band's three surviving members when they were recipients of the esteemed Kennedy Center honor in the presence of President Barack Obama and First Lady Michelle Obama, which is now a video
so cool.
I want to watch.
Yeah, I gotta see that.
Yeah, after we finish recording, I think I'm gonna go watch that. That sounds like something I'd enjoy.
Yeah.
As usual on this pod, we talk about what was the most authentic, least authentic aspects of the film. Did you have something for most?
Most authentic, I think, is the way the kids act. And as I said before, I think it's because these aren't, aside from Miranda Cosgrove, they're not child actors. They are child musicians that they told to act. Because of that, they act just like regular kids. They giggle at Jack Black, and they just, like, they act in a way that isn't like a young person who is told to act. And I just appreciate how much like kids the kids are.
Absolutely. The one I had for most authentic was, and I don't want to be too hard on the character of Dewey, but we all know a Dewey, mm-hmm. like an adult who has a very unrealistic dream, acting like everyone is absolutely crazy for not believing in him.
Yeah, no, for sure. We all have that. Also, I think the biggest flip is watching as a kid versus watching as an adult is that Sarah Silverman's character, yeah, she's supposed to be the terrible girlfriend, but as a kid, you absolutely hate her. As an adult, she is so correct.
She is like, absolutely, I had that down too. She is so like, correct. She is the actual true unsung hero of this movie and deserves better than having to live with Ned and Dewey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like the fact that Ned has let Dewey walk all over him, like she is exactly the voice of reason that Ned needs to stand up to Dewey for just not paying his rent over and over and over again. And it was also funny as a kid, I had no idea who Sarah Silverman was. I like, to me, it was just like, oh, Sarah Silverman, the girl from School of Rock, not the flip. And I think as an adult, it's almost like the Squidward transition, where as a kid, we all hate Squidward. And then as we get older, we're like, oh, yeah, Squidward had terrible neighbors. I get it.
That's a very fun like theory we need to put into play at some point, like the Squidward theory.
Yeah. Yeah, character like you hate as a kid that you sympathize with as you get older.
Yeah, like when Dewey essentially puts Ned's entire life at risk and Sarah Silverman loses her shit because like you're apologizing to him. Like, yeah, she's very right.
Yeah, and the other thing that also doesn't make sense about all of what Ned or all of what Dewey did is he's trying to get money for Ned, but he's taking Ned's money. Like, it's not like he's getting a new source of income. I know Ned was like doing a different substitute teacher job somewhere else, but like, it's not like he's found this new trove of income. It's just stealing Ned's potential income and then giving it to Ned to pay rent, which Dewey owes him.
So that rolls into my least authentic. And I get it is a movie. You have to make it work.
Yeah, you have to know you're watching a movie.
That private school would ask for some ID. They would need to see a license.
At least I could see the first day being believable because it's so last minute, oh shit. Especially because I went to a school like this, K-8, where you just, I think for the first couple of grades, it was just like your teacher taught everything. It wasn't until I think fifth or sixth grade that they really got into this is the history teacher, this is the math teacher, this is the English teacher. So I could see that being a oh crap moment. But you're right. Once you get to day two, you probably do a check.
Oh, for sure. Like even to get into a public elementary school now, you have to give them your ID and they make a sticker with a picture of your ID on it, like a mm-hmm. visitor sticker. Private schools, you know, you've got a gate you need to get into. There is no, and you'd also see the van when he pulls up in the van, you're going to have a little more scrutiny when you see that van.
Yeah. They also probably would have a picture of Ned Schneebly. I would think
true,
like yeah. Somewhere they would know what he looks like.
Like it is I mean, those parents were right. I mean, I think if this happens in reality and the parents don't do the turn heel where they're, you know, hey, we actually didn't get had, this is actually a great thing, we're going to support this school, I think that school would have gotten closed down. I think this would have been this would have been splashed on 60 Minutes.
Oh yeah for sure.
It's tough, but let's get into what worked about this one. What stands out for you, Mike? What makes School of Rock a Hall of Fame movie?
First off, Jack Black's performance.
Absolutely.
He's just in his exact element. It is the closest he can get to basically doing a Tenacious D movie with it actually having a different script and he's playing a character. I think the incorporation of music is really solid. The whole soundtrack is really good. And what I appreciate about the soundtrack is that it's not just well-known classic rock song after well-known classic rock song over and over and over again. And I think that that's a really easy decision that it could have been made, is just like, oh, let's get like Iron Man and all of these very, very well-known songs. The fact that they have like a lesser known song by David Bowie and the song that I don't even know what it is, but when he's running away from the parents and it just starts with the like, just scream. I had the soundtrack, but it was my friend had it and he burned it onto a CD, so it just had track 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, whatever. It didn't have the actual names, so I had to type them in and I never knew what that song was called, so I just saved it as like A-G-H-G-H-G-H in all caps. But the soundtrack is really solid and it works really well in the movie, and they do a good job of incorporating like well-known songs. I also appreciate that, like you had talked about earlier, when they're bringing in the kids to start playing the music, it's a way to like, you make Smoke on the Water a song in the movie without using Smoke on the Water. Like you have the kids doing it. And then same thing with You Shook Me All Night Long and Touch Me by the Doors. It's a nice way of, they do a lot of nods to music without actually putting the exact song in there. And I think that's fun. This
it's
also
not
just
super heavy handed with the music.
Yeah. It's like integrated smoothly and it's not shoved down your throat and forced. It's worked in nicely. And also I'm remembering a quote that might be my favorite dark horse for favorite quote, is when he quotes, he's talking to all the teachers and he's like, what if we just let the children's laughter remind us how we used to be? And then one of the teachers is like, I think that's a song. And he goes, no, it isn't. And then similarly, where he says, and those who can't teach, teach gym. Like, I love him chumming it up with the teacher.
Yeah, and then it's like, oh, he's part of the group now.
Yep.
this is a movie that there's not a single other actor I can think of where I think this works. Like the movie, it was written for him, but it is, it's like, I don't even know. Like it is just so, it is so perfect for him. It's like Billy Crystal in When Harry Met Sally. I can't picture anyone else being Harry in When Harry Met Sally because of Billy Crystal's like witty neuroticism. And Jack Black is just the perfect embodiment of this film, of this character. It is, I mean, the character of Dewey is so authentic, because like we said, we've all met a Dewey. Like, very realistic. Dewey was a guy who loved rock music, could play the guitar well, but couldn't write songs for shit. Like, it is very hard to write music. Very realistic that Dewey was very unable to look at any potential negative long-term consequences of his actions.
Yeah, for sure.
Dewey lives for the minute.
Yeah, oh, definitely. I also think that all of the side characters work really well. There's no side character that I think stands out in a way that feels unbelievable. Like, Ned Schneebly is such the perfect walked all over roommate slash friend. Sarah Silverman is such a perfect annoying, naggy girlfriend, even though we do, you know, support her for being correct. The parents are all perfect, angry, rich parents. The teacher is such a perfect, like, stuffy up teacher that has just one thing that they like that lets them let loose. The band that Dewey was in is just so perfect, and like, you hate that lead singer so much.
Despise
especially
him.
After he gets his hair cut, where his hair sucks even more. Like, you just, he's so hateable. Spider is just so absurd, especially when he wears a shirt that is just leather sleeves and nothing else.
Incredible look.
Like, all of the other side characters, I think, are all just so much fun. And I think they all bring something to the table. And there's not a single person in the cast, in the ensemble, that sticks out. And you're like, I just really didn't like this. I think everybody works really well.
They do a very good job of spreading the ball around, especially with the kids.
Almost
all the kids have something to do. It's very good. Like you said, very good child actor performances. They seem very natural.
Mm-hmm. The only kid I didn't like as a kid, and even watching back, Freddie is overacting a little bit. But that being said, he is like the type of kid that is trying to be too cool, so it kind of works. But yeah, I think the only kid performance that I didn't think was great was Freddie. And also, it is very clear to tell that Miranda Cosgrove is the only true actor, because she is fantastic.
Yeah,
and I think if she plays any other character, it doesn't work. But the fact that she plays the know-it-all, goody-goody-two-shoes teacher's pet works, and she's very funny.
Yeah, it's interesting. She is the only child actor who really broke through in this one. She is the only one who I think probably is still having a successful career.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if all the other kids who are musicians like went on to do music stuff, because they're all incredibly talented. Like, I was learning guitar at that age, and I couldn't do anything close to what Zach Mooneyham does. So,
well, that's actually the unfortunate. The actor who played Zach Mooneyham has fallen on some hard times.
Oh no!
As of recently. So that's tough. You hate to see that, but it seems like everyone else is doing. They have these reunions and they play the song and everything. It's just Miranda Cosgrove is the only one who has kind of transcended. I want to shout out something that I never noticed until this past rewatch, and it was something that my fiance pointed out before the Battle of the Bands tryout. Incredibly body positive conversation with Tamika.
Because I'm fat.
Tamika, hey, you've got something everybody wants. You've got talent, girl. You have an incredible singing voice, and I'm not just saying that. You heard of Aretha Franklin, right? Okay, she's a big lady, but when she starts singing, she blows people's minds. Everybody wants to party with Aretha! And you know who else has a weight issue?
Who?
Me. But once I get up on stage, start doing my thing, people worship me! Because I'm sexy and chubby, man.
Why don't you go on a diet?
Because I like to eat. Is that such a crime?
Yeah, I was going to say, I just thought of that as we were talking about the performances. I was thinking, wow, Tamika's a really good singer. Oh, I wonder if she is doing anything. Yeah, I love that, especially for 2003, the whole conversation about her just like not being confident because she's not skinny enough, which is unfortunately a big reality in music, is like you can't just be good. You have to also be hot, which I think is so weird. It is so weird that that is like part of being a pop icon is like, oh, are you good at singing? Oh, you're also really attractive, right? Like you can't just be good at the thing you're good at. But yeah, I think it's really
we talked about that when we talked about Pitch Perfect, though, and like that Ben Platt's character was such like a little weirdo that they wouldn't let him really shine until the end of the movie, when in reality he's just the most talented person in the world.
Yeah, so I think for a 2003 movie, this was really solid, and I just like that Jack Black was just like, you know, straight up as Dewey, but there are certain parts of when he's Dewey that you can tell he's just kind of being Jack Black. And this is one of them where he was like, I'm fat, I can sing, whatever. And I think that that's good. All of the moments where he brings out the confidence in the kid, Lawrence and Tamika especially, I think it's really solid.
I think so. Yeah, I think so too. There is a very authentic moment right after Ned has discovered that Dewey has been impersonating him, and Sarah Silverman comes home, and, you know, Dewey's like, you know, you can't tell her, don't tell her anything. And as soon as he leaves, she gives him that, what's going on, Ned, that moment. And you,
oh,
you know,
so good.
You know, Ned Schneebly, anyone who's been in a relationship knows that Ned Schneebly is fucked.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I watched that, like, I openly laugh when she just hits him with that, what's going on, Ned? Like, oh, ooh, Ned's
she's great. She acts this very, very well.
She is. Let's go into what didn't work. And I mean, we already talked about it, but what didn't work is Sarah Silverman's character is actually the hero in this movie. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think like it's about the audience, but yeah, I think, you know, if you're gearing this more towards kids, she has to be the Buzz Killington, if you will. But she is right. Like,
she's
she
really
only
right.
Exists as a bad guy when you can gloss over and yada yada over what Dewey Finn has done, which is just commit multiple crimes. But yeah, I think that might not work as well as the look back. Obviously, the fact that this Battle of the Bands is a sold out show on a Tuesday afternoon or whatever it is, completely unbelievable. The fact that he's able to get all this together with the bus and all of that, like, there's no way. All of the school logistics, but the, like this, it's a movie. It's, you have to just enjoy this movie. You can't think about that kind of stuff because it's a movie.
Yeah. I also have to ask, how did at parent teacher night, how did Dewey escape the school? So he's basically cornered. The parents are in the room. The cops and Ned and Sarah Silverman are in the doorway, and Joan Cusack. He has just said that cringeworthy comment about, you know, mm-hmm. your kids have touched me and I think I've touched them. So the parents are furious. The cop knows something's up. And then the next we see Dewey is sprinting down an empty hallway with his guitars. Like, I feel like the only way he gets out of that situation is if he throws himself through a window.
Yep. I don't know how he gets away. I mean, I guess the security, the only thing I could think of is like the security is not as tight when it's parent teacher night as opposed to a full school day. But yeah, you would think that they would have you'd think they'd be a little bit better prepared for this situation.
Yeah, that cop could have been able, you know, should have been able to put him in a bear hug or something. I don't think Dewey's getting out of there.
The other thing, the soundproofing of the classroom.
Like, there's, yeah, they would have been hearing that music throughout the entire school. There's just no way.
No, there's no way at all. I mean, like, some of the things make sense. You know, they've got the mats on the drums and the things in the doorway, but, like, there's no way. There's no way at all.
The Kevin Costner Freddie Prinze Jr. Awards for Best and Worst On-Screen Job Depiction. I think we've already talked about how Black is just perfect casting. He's able to untether himself, like this character mm-hmm. is just like this character needs to be this washed wannabe. I want to give a shout out to Joan Cusack as the kind of like neurotic, very nervous principal. I thought that was a very believable character.
I think so too. It was very believable, her hesitations towards trying to do things and step out of the box and field trips and all that kind of stuff, and you know, wanting him to stick to the curriculum and everything. I think it's super believable and it's very fun. She's such a fun character, and it's especially wild when you think about the other things she's done. Like the fact that she voices Jessie from Toy Story is always fun.
Yeah. No, I've always actually been a Joan Cusack fan and her interesting accent or dialect.
Yeah, like the wonderfully Midwestern-ish accent that she has, it just fits. And the look, she's just got the perfect look of stuffy, given the costume and everything they put her in. She fits that role so well. It's so fun.
Yeah, so let's get into the Lenny Harris Pinch Hitter Award for Best Supporting Character. There's like kind of like we said, they really spread the ball around in this
yeah.
one. Like there's a lot of it is personal preference. Like Miranda Cosgrove is really good. Kevin Clark is Freddy. Like you said, the kid's going for it. Freddy's going to get into some shit in high school. Like going into the van was just the start.
Yeah, there's a lot. I mean, it's hard. It's hard because I don't think that there is any bigger, like there's very little distinction. There's like three tiers of characters. There's the main, there's Jack Black. Then there's the main characters of like Ned and Sarah Silverman and Joan Cusack. And then there's the kids in the extras and stuff. So it's kind of hard to pick the pinch hitter here, but I think I'm just going to go out on a limb and say Spider. Spider's just so fun. Like, he starts off as the perfect person you would hate to get replaced with. This is Spider. He's replacing you. Just, oh my God. And then he's just, what's up? Like he doesn't, he's just, it's so great. And then the fact that he gets the hots for the teacher at the end is just, he's so funny.
That would be a district attorney, Lucas Babbitt. That, I mean, just incredible. Graduated as a, got his doctorate from the University of Houston Law School. I mean, amazing. He's been the DA in Tyler County, Texas since 2018.
Incredible.
Wild.
Good for him. Also, absolutely, I'm now realizing, because I'm imagining, I was going to say, the way he, when he's playing bass or guitar or whatever he's playing, and he's dancing around and stuff, he does a really great like 360 pivot body roll movement, which is very fun. But then I remember that song, the fact that that song won is a fucking crime.
Oh,
like,
it's so bad.
Heal Me, I'm Heartsick is bad. It's worse than the song they sing in the beginning. Like, the obviously the Jack Black solo is ridiculous and over the top, but Fight for Your Love is so much better than Heal Me, I'm Heartsick. Heal Me, I'm Heartsick blows.
It's awful. The only reason they would have given it to them is they're like, I don't think we can't just bestow this prize money on all these kids.
Yeah.
There's something illegal about that.
That's the only thing I could think, but it gave me flashbacks again to Pitch Perfect. It really felt like opposite in that you're rooting for School of Rock to win and they don't, but still, like, the School of Rock is like the Troublemaker song. It was just so much better.
The Troublemaker song hits so good. I just wanted real quick, I need to tell you some of the characters that Lucas Babin has in his,
yeah, please,
in his IMDb. So these are just some of the names. Model at Party, mm-hmm. Handsome Prince, mm-hmm. Spider, Big Stoner, Junkie, The Knight, Boyfriend / Photographer.
I mean, yeah, it's all fitting the bill.
It's what you think of when you think of Spider. The Big Chill, my favorite category in any podcast. I have one nomination. It is the performance of the School of Rock at the end.
Yeah, it's just, it's so good. I think the only thing that would rival it is the emotional moments that he has with the kids, whether it's the Zach bullying thing or the Lawrence not being cool enough, nobody ever talks to me, or Tamika body issues. I think those are the only things that rival it, but I think that final performance just has all of that same goodness in one. And then you get to see the parents in the crowd being proud of their kids. And the lighting guy, I think Gordon is his name, the lighting guy does well, and the costumes on the fly. Like, I think that final scene is just untouchable.
And the song is just legitimately really, really good. Like, it still hits.
Yeah, and what I think they do a really good job of is, like, you know enough about the song from the earlier scenes in the movie that you know to expect, but there are still really cool moments that you don't get. And the biggest one for me is Lawrence's keyboard solo.
Oh, when he's doing the
really
point.
Really cool.
It's the callback to the point thing.
Mm-hmm. And then the actual like solo itself is really good. So there's some nice, fun, hidden elements where you know what the song is, but it's still, to see it in its full final form is great. And then some added things where you're like, oh, whoa, the solos. Like, it's really fun.
Yeah, it's the same thing as That Thing You Do, whereas if in That Thing You Do, if the song That Thing You Do isn't really, really good, the movie just isn't nearly as effective. If this song was only just okay, I think of the song at the end of Freaky Friday. That song is good. It is not astounding. I think one is a tier above. I think it elevates the movie.
Yeah, it's really solid. Just everyone does well. All the performances are great. It's fantastic.
How would you improve this, Mike, if at all?
Man, I think if you want to improve it at all, maybe you try to make some elements a little more believable. Like you give a bit more thought to how they kind of get around, because you kind of have to just suspend a lot of disbelief. But it's such a fun movie that that's not a huge deal. So I don't think it's a huge thing that's necessary. Like, it's, you're not going into this movie expecting realism, so I think for me that's the only thing I can really think of, and it doesn't really matter that much.
Yeah, I think the only thing, if you give Dewey a few more redeemable qualities early in the movie, he's very ungrateful to Ned.
Right.
And I think if you know, he's only like, he is only taking that job. It's not really because he feels that bad for Ned. He's like, they're going to kick me out if I don't get this money. Like, Ned has pretty much told him, if you don't, you know, my girlfriend's going to dump me and I'm going to have to kick you out. And he says like, oh, I'm doing this for you. I'm not doing this for her. Dewey's doing it for him.
Yeah.
So yeah. I think you make him a little more redeemable. But yeah, this movie, and I mean, considering it came out 17 years ago, has actually aged really well.
Yeah, it's actually, I'm surprised how well it holds up. I remember the first time I rewatched it after a long gap, because I had a span from 2003 to 2008 where I watch it like every day. But when my wife and I were flying back from we were in Italy, and we flew back, we had a really long flight, so we were trying to pick a bunch of different movies to watch on the flight home. And I saw they had School of Rock, and I was like, oh my gosh, have you ever seen it? And she hadn't. I was like, you have to, it's one of my favorites. Please, can we watch it? And the whole time I was like, man, this movie came out right in that time where things don't age well at all. And looking back, it doesn't look so great, but it holds up.
It does. It does. The last category before More Restored. So this is an interesting one. It's already been on Broadway. It's already been a TV show. Would you want to see a prequel, sequel, remake, or none of the above of this movie? I think a prequel is like Ned and Dewey and their band, their metal band.
Yeah, I feel like the answer I want to say none of the above. I think it's just good as
I think
itself.
That's the play.
I don't think there's really any story that I'm dying to see. I think that you get all that you need from the school in the ending credits, which is one of the best credits, just like them all doing their stuff. And basically every kid gets to do a little solo thing. The singers get to do solo riffs and the musicians get to do solo music stuff. So I feel like they kind of tie up everything really nicely, that you don't need another story. And I don't think you need any backstory either.
One of the things that I love, that is one of the only things really from COVID era America that I've enjoyed, is cast kind of banding back together. Like you saw the Parks and Rec cast do one episode, that, you know, that kind of Zoom call episode. You saw like the West Wing is dropping a thing. I think that's this weekend that we're recording, is doing a thing. I would like, because I like the reunion video so much, it would be cool to see them do like a 10-15 minute skit, maybe raise something for charity. I would be, because again, like in most literal terms, I love seeing the band get back together. But
right.
I don't think this is IP that they should do much more with.
Yeah, I agree.
Mike, I want to leave you with one more thing that I saw in Lucas Babin, a.k.a. Spider's Wikipedia. This is very, very important. Babin was Paris Hilton's love interest in the music video Stars Are Blind.
Wow. Oh my gosh, this man's career is so interesting.
What an impact this guy has made.
Gosh, absolutely incredible. Wow.
Like, stunning. Stunning. I can't expand any more after that. I think that's a good place to leave it. Mike, thanks so much for returning to Big Screen Sports. Tell the folks again where they can follow you.
Thanks again for having me. It's always fun to come on. This is great. I love that I have been on the show 4 times and I still haven't done a sports movie. And I love, like, I genuinely love that.
We're going to have to figure that out, though, at some point. We're going to have to do just a real plain, boring sports movie.
I'm enjoying keeping the streak going. But yeah, if you want to follow me on social media, it's at Shube17. And then if you want to listen to my podcasts, Potterless, Horse, and Meddling Adults, just search those wherever you get your podcasts. Meddling Adults, Season 1, Episode 10, had Kyle on it, so you can see him tackle some Encyclopedia Brown mysteries and invent 2 minor league baseball teams along the way. It's a good time.
It was a great time. I encourage everyone, go check out Meddling Adults, all of Mike's work. If you enjoyed this episode of Big Screen Sports, please remember, subscribe wherever you get your podcast. You guys know the drill. Rate, review. I have no scheduling updates for you because we are recording this about 2 or 3 weeks before the actual episode drops. Woo! But I'm sure November is going to be a great month on Big Screen Sports, and we'll catch you next Monday. Thanks for listening.